Good morning, Ottawa. This is the Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Got really excited about a possible trip out of the country for early September when I heard that the vaccine mandates in Canada are being lifted for travelers. Now, I have a vaccination and I have a certificate, so it wasn't that. It was just, you know, this idea that maybe the lineups will get a little bit shorter. I don't know, will they now get shorter? Because it turns out we're lifting the vaccine mandates for travel within the country, domestic travel, not for international travel. And the other part of the testing procedure, they're only lifting it temporarily. And then the random tests will take place at a place off-site from the airports. So what are we going to take people, drive them to a... Can you imagine now you get selected from random testing and they're going to drive you to some warehouse somewhere and you got to hang out there now waiting for your test results? Oh, man. All to do what? Stop COVID-19 from getting into Canada? Got news for you. It's a little late. It's a little late. I think the Prime Minister probably, when he realized, I have COVID again, realized that vaccines don't really stop you from getting COVID anymore. And that's not to make me an anti-vaxxer, because I'm certainly not. If it keeps you from dying, keeps you out of a hospital emergency room or out of intensive care, then I think the vaccines are still effective. But they're not doing a whole lot to stop the spread of COVID-19 anymore. They're just not. I know there's some evidence to show that right after you get a booster shot, you're still less likely to get the disease. And if you're less likely to get it, you're less likely to spread it. So they're not completely useless to stop the spread, but they're pretty close. So, and if this was a new variant that just popped up and it's only in one country right now, we know it'll get here no matter what we do, right? We know it'll get, but I'm still okay with saying we're suspending travel from that country temporarily while we have time to prepare for this new variant to arrive and make sure that everyone has a booster, if the booster is going to be effective against it, all that stuff. But yeah, I think the Prime Minister maybe finally woke up and realized, you know, I just can't keep selling this vaccine idea anymore, the mandates idea, because it became all about politics and not about science. And that finally caught up with him. And it took the Prime Minister getting COVID for the second time, maybe for him to realize that. Did you know there's a critically low national blood supply because of COVID, by the way? It's something I want to squeeze in because I can understand why people didn't want to go donate blood. I got to go sit in a clinic somewhere and sit next to people. And yeah, I get it. But the clinic still existed because they still need blood. People still get in accidents. People still have surgeries. The CEO of the Canadian Blood Services, Graham Scherer, says the system isn't in danger at this point, but it sounds like there's a but here.
We continue to meet hospital needs. We have a stable inventory of blood now. But, you know, we are relying increasingly on a smaller number of donors and therefore relying on these people to come in with an increased frequency. So that is not sustainable over the long run.
The need for blood actually dropped during the lockdowns because there were fewer car accidents and other things. People just weren't traveling as much. And unfortunately, I think people were also avoiding seeing a doctor about serious medical conditions too. And surgeries were canceled and all. But now we've returned to the pre-pandemic demand. And as he said, they're okay, but it's the same group of people that they're counting on. We're going in all the time. And for me, though, blood donating is like mass transit. I'll use it if it's easy. That's the key. I used to live in the Manulife Center in Toronto, and they had a blood donor clinic on the main floor because the apartment building was connected to a shopping area and the subway. And I couldn't get out of the building without passing the sign that said clinic, blood donor clinic. So about once a month or so, you just go, yeah, okay. With a nice lady with a little notepad. Hi, would you be? Okay. Couldn't say no. I don't remember the last time I donated blood because I've never seen one in Manotick. So you got to make it easy, Matt. You were donating blood a whole lot.
Yeah, I do it regularly. I'm good to go again. I think it's just with the summer, there's no clinic near my house. So I'm kind of, I'm listening to you say that. And I'm like, yeah, that's exactly where I'm at right now. Once they bring it back to that church up the street, yeah, I'll be there.
Just make it easy and I'll absolutely help you. You know what else they could do? Maybe this is wrongheaded, but I just did some blood tests, annual blood tests. So you go into a clinic, private clinic in our public healthcare system.
Oh, you monster.
Which I'm okay with, and I didn't see anyone complaining. It was pretty efficient. You know, it was a fairly new clinic, and so I wasn't telling people about it because the lineups were better than most places. I think a lot of people have now discovered it. The lineups are getting bigger. But you can get an appointment, and we actually waited in the car until they went. I took my mother-in-law because she needed her annual blood test as well. So I got a prescription for it, or a, what's the right word for it?
Like a script and order?
Whatever it is, for a blood test. And I got there, and the woman said, ooh, you got here just in time. This expires tomorrow. There's an expiration date on these things? I just got these from Dr. Workin like 3 weeks ago. No, it's 6 months old. Oh, took me a while to get here. But here I am. No, but while I'm there giving them blood samples, and I'm already plugged, couldn't they take extra?
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Because that place was filled with people doing blood tests.
Sir, would you like to donate blood today?
Yeah.
While you're here.
Now, the reason I said it might, maybe it's wrongheaded, because, you know, I'm there because I've got this massive rash on my private parts and I've got to get a blood. Maybe that's...
Yeah, maybe it's like they're testing your blood for a reason, right?
No, but most people are there for standard yearly. They want to check cholesterol levels and for diabetes and all that stuff. Why not? Come on, this is a good idea. Someone tell me I'm wrong.
Well,
maybe I'm missing something.
For the person going in for a blood infection, no. I don't know how many people, like, if you're going in there, but you're not in bad shape. You're not there because you're like, oh, I'm worried I'm going to die.
No, obviously they could screen you and say, you're here because you have a massive blood infection. You're not going to donate. But if you're just there for standard, like I was, standard blood tests, why not? I'm already hooked up.
Let's do it.
It's not even an extra needle. No one likes the needle.
No, but once you get it, it's already in.
Yeah, and the woman had a little trouble finding. Look, I still got the bruises trying to find the
vein. Oh,
yeah,
you do. Look at that.
So I get plugged like 3 or 4 times. Oh, finally tapped the right spot here.
Did they give you cookies afterwards? Because when I donate blood, they give me Oreos.
Well, they'd have to add cookies for sure. Just as a little adjunct while I'm there. So the man who killed 10 people when he drove that rented van on a Toronto sidewalk has been sentenced to life in prison. No parole for 25 years. 8 women and 2 men died on April 23rd, 2018. I don't know. That was, to me, how long does this trial have to go on? We all saw the guy get arrested coming out of the van. It seems like overkill some of these trials, doesn't it? Like, do we have to have that many witnesses? If I'm on the jury, I'm like, show me the video. Oh, that's the same guy. We're done here. Right? This video of the whole thing happening with that van. And then he steps out of the van. I'll give you one chance as the defense to call an expert to prove to me that tape's doctored. And that's your like a bad YouTube video where they took the head of someone and put it on the body and you could clearly tell because it doesn't always move with the body. Like, yeah, it's not the same guy. But otherwise, I can't believe it took so long to come to this conclusion. Also, I think I was away for a couple of days when the Supreme Court wrongly decided that you can't give people sentences where they serve one after the concurrent, as opposed to, what's the word for it when they...
Consecutive and concurrent, yeah.
Yeah, what's wrong with consecutive sentences? I could just ask yourself this question. In not 25 years from now, when he's eligible for parole, let's say 20 years from now, will those 8 women and 2 men still be dead? Oh, that's right, they will be. I don't care if this guy never gets out. It's cruel and unusual. Yeah, so's what he did. I don't care. If we're not going to have capital punishment, then some people need to be locked up forever. And don't come to me when he's 75 years old and he's a sweet old man now and he found religion of some kind. I don't care. I don't care. You can't undo what you did. That's where you're staying for the rest of your life. Because that's what's just. 6:16, The Morning Rush. The more that you say, the less I know. Wherever you
stray, I follow. I'm begging for you to take. You're listening to The Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
You know, I was thinking we might have to do, instead of our election trail mix, now that the election's over, a daily LRT inquiry report.
Oh.
With some dramatic music, the sounds of trains chugging along tracks, or I guess to be more appropriate, the sounds of trains sitting quietly on the track with announcements like, could you please exit the train on the tracks? Buses will be waiting for you. Because it's the LRT, you know, it seems to, it's been pretty good lately.
It has, yes.
It's been pretty good. Now, it hasn't been under much pressure.
Those seven civil servants. Right,
because when you don't need all of the trains, remember they used to tell us every day, we've got 7 out of 8 trains running. Wait, aren't you supposed to have 12 or whatever? We keep a couple in reserve. Okay, well, now it doesn't matter. We need 4 trains. You could have 6 broken down. Yeah, we'll figure it out. No one needs to know. But yeah, the inquiry is underway now, the provincial inquiry, and it's going to be focused on, well, nothing unexpected. Was the budget too tight? Was the timeline always too short, right? The mayor said on time and on budget, on time and on budget, on time and on budget. But was it the right timeline? Was it the right budget? What happened to that 12 consecutive day trial test? We knew at the time that they were cheating on that. We knew that because they just couldn't do it. And I don't know why you think for a minute that if you can't get 12 days in a row, you can launch and then get 1,000 days in a row. That was never going to go well. And it suddenly they just remember the politic, we just started to act like, well, no, we said 12 days. We've had 12 good days. 12 out of how many, though? Oh, you want in a row. Well, no, that's what you said you wanted. And so those are just some of the questions. But I think a big one is really going to be the budget and what happened with it. Was it ever going to be enough? Did we go cheap? Because, you know, the train maker who came in at the last minute made a bid. They were saying last week, Alstom, yeah, you know what? We didn't have a lot of time to put this together and we really needed a year. We had 3 months and I don't know. Were we doing it all on the cheap? It sure seems like it. But then if you think about it, the whole LRT thing was doing it on the cheap. Here's what we'll do in a major northern city. How often have you heard this, by the way, in a winter? This is the most northern capital of any major country in the world. Remember, we hear that, right? The coldest capital in the world. You know what we'll do? We'll build a train that runs on electrical wires, and we'll put it outside instead of having a subway and bury it or, right, or some better system. I mean, it's a nice idea that we'll use electricity when fuel is so expensive right now, but I remember the first time I saw it. Do you remember this, Matt? I called you, and I said, I was driving out towards Orleans, and I said, is this the new train I'm looking at? I just arrived. Where are you? Yeah, that's it. That's the new station. It has overhead wires.
Yeah.
You said, yeah, that's the plan.
Yeah, that's what we're doing here.
So I called my buddy Colin because he's dialed in with that stuff. Colin, not that I'm disbelieving Matt. I'm out in Orleans. Yeah, that's the new system. It has overhead wires. He goes, yeah, can you believe that? Like, that just looked like a bad, maybe because I grew up in Toronto where I'm used to streetcar drivers getting out with a big pole, bang, bang, banging ice off the wires because the streetcar's stuck. I mean, it just, maybe it was just a bad idea from start to finish, right? So those are questions that are going to be asked. SNC-Lavalin's Ricardo Constantino says, the budget was definitely top of mind when the winning consortium was put together in the first place.
We believe that delivering the project within the budget they have available was of primary importance to the city.
Yeah, they had someone else on the stand. The first witness was John Jensen, the city's former director of rail implementation. And he was just grilled by the co-lead counsel, John Adair. about whether the budget and timeline was too constrained. Setting the budget that early puts you at risk. You're sort of tethering yourself to a particular number at a time when you don't necessarily have all the information you need, is what Adair said to Jensen. And Jensen said he didn't recall any specific council directive, only that the city staff and its experts managed the budget to deliver the best value for the lowest cost. But they then produced a couple of different documents written by Jensen in March 2011, where he referred to the designing of the system specifically with a $2.1 billion budget. He insisted that, well, no, but that was a target, not a hard line. The lawyer, Adair, also challenged Jensen on reduced timelines for the project. It was supposed to be completed by 2019. But in March 2011, the mayor-led Finance and Economic Development Committee, according to one report, was already pushing the LRT to get it done sooner, get it done faster. So the mayor's name is being brought into this for engaging the rail office to ensure that every opportunity to advance the project more quickly is fully explored. Now, is that necessarily a bad thing? Can we do it faster? I mean, there's no harm in asking. But when does asking become pressure? And that's going to be one of the tricky things. Because if I'm the mayor, I might also be, could we do it? Like, it's maybe we could launch it even earlier. I might ask that question. But the number one question should always be safety. Will it be safe? Will it work? But if you could still do that faster, I'd be okay with that as well. So it's only day one. It's already getting interesting. 6:30, the morning rush.
Boy, what a shot this is for Tim Stützle. His second goal of the season. Stings this one off the inside of the post and into the back of the net.
At the rink with Gord Wilson.
So, Gord, I thought it would be the Oilers and the Lightning in the Stanley Cup Finals, and instead, Connor McDavid is out partying, getting himself in trouble on social media because his season is over.
Yeah, his season is done, yeah, and so are the Oilers. And that was, what, 8 days ago? June 6th was the last time the Colorado Avalanche played hockey. June 6th. And tomorrow will be, what day will tomorrow be? The 15th. 9 days, Bill, the Avalanche have played, have waited to play. Tampa Bay, fresh off their victory, obviously. And you know what? This is why we pay so much attention to hockey in the Olympics, why we pay so much attention to the World Cup of hockey. It's best on best, and I think the NHL has best on best starting tomorrow night for this year's Stanley Cup Final.
So how much is it going to hurt the Avalanche that they've basically been running a training camp for the past couple of weeks?
Yeah, there's going to be some rust. There's no question about that, and we witnessed it here in Ottawa in 2007 when the Senators ran through the first three rounds of the series, five games, and then they got to the final, and they had to wait 9 days, and they were sluggish, they were slow, they were sloppy in game one of them. They made it close. But they lost that first game to Anaheim, and once you're able to set a tone and tempo and win games by setting tone and tempo in playoff hockey, and in, especially in the final, you're able to generate a lot of momentum and just a lot of confidence. And the Anaheim Ducks did that. The Senators were out of rhythm. I can remember going through those 9 days and Brian Murray, the head coach, saying, okay, we've got to replicate a game day situation. You fellas can stay in a hotel if you like the night before. We're going to go through a game day routine where there's going to be a morning skate. There's going to be an afternoon nap. You can either go back to the hotel. You can go back to your room. You can go back to your own home. But we'll have a 7:30 game. Well, that whole routine took place, and at 7:30 they dropped the puck. They had referees. They had two teams that were all set to go, and they dropped the puck. And there was no hitting. There was limited shots when there was traffic in front. Nobody wanted to hurt anybody. Nobody wanted to get hurt. And as much as you want to try and replicate a game situation, it's impossible.
Yeah, but at least it was a good idea to keep the body in sync, right? Keep
absolutely, yeah. And I can guarantee that Jared Bednar, the head coach of the Avalanche, has done similar things with the Avs. It's all new to them. They have not advanced this far to postseason play, and so they want to try and keep rhythm going. Now, the good news about being off for a couple of days, or 9 days in this case, Nazem Kadri skated on Sunday, without a stick, but he skated on Sunday. Andrew Cogliano, who has a broken digit as well in one of his hands, skated without a stick. So there's certainly hope for these players. There's hope for the rest of the team that there's a possibility these two guys do get back in the lineup. Braden Point, who's missed 10 games of Stanley Cup play with the champions, the defending champ Lightning, was back on the practice ice in full gear in a full practice yesterday. The Lightning didn't announce that he was going to be good to go for tomorrow night's game, but there is a very, I would say, a 95% chance now, barring any setbacks, that he does get into this final. So
you know what's interesting, though? Those players being missing from both teams, and yet here they are in the finals, tells you a lot about what a Stanley Cup contender needs, right? Because Kadri had a career season, and he's had some pretty good seasons.
Yep.
And he was playing incredibly in the playoffs. Braden Point, I thought when that guy got hurt against the Leafs, the Lightning are in trouble, but it barely slowed them down. And that tells you about the depth that these two teams have, how great the talent is from the first line to the fourth. So this is going to be quite a matchup. Are you ready to make a prediction on it, though? Most people seem to be going with the Avalanche.
I want to touch very quickly on Braden Point, 14-goal playoff goals in the last two seasons to lead all players. This team, this Lightning team, 8-2 without him. So that is a number that emphasizes the points that you just made. You know what? I'm going to say the Colorado Avalanche, and I'm not sure if wishful thinking steps into play here, because really I would love Nick Paul to win a Stanley Cup with the Lightning. He's such a wonderful person, first of all, but he's done such a wonderful job helping the Lightning. He's been a big, big part. I think Colorado just is going to have an edge in depth and stardom. But boy, as I say this out loud here now, I'm starting to talk myself out of it just based on how we've seen Tampa roll along. The pedigree, the goaltending, I'm going with Tampa. I'm going to go with Tampa Bay. Yeah, you can talk yourself right out of it. No matter how much you look at things at different angles, and I've been reading a lot about the Avs and watching an awful lot of Tampa hockey, I just think Tampa Bay might have a slight edge somewhere along the way. Certainly in goaltending, there's no doubt in my mind they have the better goaltender. And Andre Vasilevsky, with two Stanley Cup wins in the last 2 years, just gets better with every series. And this will be the final one, so he'll be at his best.
I just feel like I haven't watched enough West Coast hockey to really have a sense of it. And you don't see those teams play against the East and the West enough during the regular season to get a great feel of how they match up.
Yeah, no. You don't beat Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl in four straight without a reason. And their reason is they're just really good, okay? Even without Nazem Kadri, they're really good. It's the goaltending that leaves you wondering. And Darcy Kemper and Pavel Francouz, they're two goaltenders, and they haven't named a starter yet, are question marks. They've never been here in this situation before. So big, big question marks. And Tampa, getting the scoring that they're getting from Steven Stamkos and Nikita Kucherov, and if Braden Point returns, my goodness, it's a scary, scary team offensively, and we know what they can do defensively. So, yeah it's going to be a good one, real good.
So quickly, a couple of Senators things before I let you go. Member of the media floating the idea that the Leafs, given their goalie situation, they have a goalie. They're not, I don't think they're 100% convinced he's the guy.
Yeah.
And he's also a free agent. So Matt Murray of the Sens to the Leafs. Again, it's not even a rumor, just a suggestion.
Yeah.
Is that a trade you'd look at?
Possibility of a trade, yes. There's also been the suggestion that they buy out Matt Murray and let him choose where he wants to go. I think the buyout is $10 million. So I know Anthony LeBlanc, the director of business operations, is meeting with the Senators board today, I believe, in Toronto. And he indicated last week that the budget is going to be on the agenda, and he hopes that the budget increases and obviously improves to the point where they're going to have more money to spend on players. I don't think he's going hat in hand for money with the request as well to say we need $10 million to buy out our supposed number one goaltender.
There's also talk, though, that they may want to fatten up their front office. And I'd read media reports about how it's one of the skinniest offices in the league. And they actually do pretty well considering at times they feel like they have one hand tied behind their back. So they could be expanding there, which I think, you know, you want to see them spend money on players, of course, but you need good front office, good scouting, all of those, right? You got to have those things in place.
Yeah, 100%. And again, that's an area that when you miss the playoffs five straight years, you have to look at everything. You're right. You have to, rather than not just player personnel and who's playing goal or how many are playing goal or what do we need on defense, what do we need at the forward position, you have to look at the entire organization because they've missed the playoffs five straight years, and it's not just the product on the ice that misses playoffs. It's everybody involved, whether it's from the scouting department where, you know, you've got to be able to find a diamond in the rough in an amateur draft, or you've got to be able to find that pro forward who becomes available from the Chicago Blackhawks and you think is going to fit in your team. So
you also have to be able to identify and woo free agents and make them think that the team is going to invest money in player development and medical staff and physiotherapy. And all those things are important when you want to bring good players. And they've said they want to bring some experience to this team. So you gotta show you're committed. So
yeah,
it'll
absolutely
be an interesting summer, I think, for the Sens.
Oh, a very busy one. Yep, absolutely. 100%. And it starts with the draft, obviously, and the possibility of drafting seventh overall this year or not. And the GM has indicated that that seventh overall pick might be up for grabs. So it could get extremely exciting, extremely busy July 8th when the draft takes place.
Thank you, Gord. Have a good one.
All right, Phil. Thank you, sir. Cheers.
Stanley Cup Finals getting underway. Gord Wilson, the Ottawa Senators color commentator from TSN 1200. Morning Rush. When you were talking to Dr. Dworkin about Justin Bieber and his facial paralysis, why didn't you ask him about the COVID-19 vaccine connection? Because I thought it would be stupid. But what I didn't know was there was this massive online attack from anti-vaxxers against mainstream media for not even talking about it. So, Doc, here we go.
All right.
I'll bring you into the conversation. I was reading yesterday from another doctor. Let me start here.
Yeah.
On a website I go to sometime called Science-Based Medicine.
Yes.
And he said, well, biologically, I guess you could ask the question, does, you know, your immune system under stress because you just got a vaccination maybe trigger something like this? He said, I guess it's possible, but there's absolutely no evidence. And then he spent about 5,000 words ripping this to shreds scientifically. Yeah. So now it's your turn. Why is this not a likely scenario?
Well, it's not a likely scenario because first off, we don't even know if he had the vaccine. Secondly, he had COVID in February. So if anything, it's unlikely he had a vaccine after that because there's not enough time that's passed by. The other issue is when you look at what can trigger a reactivation of the shingles virus or herpes zoster virus or HZV, it's called. That one of the main causes for activation has a very straightforward explanation when you look at sort of the root causes of stuff. And this goes with any disease process. When you get stressed, that is when your body gets stressed for any reason whatsoever, it can be an infection, it can be life events, anything, injuries, anything that happens, your body starts to produce cortisol. Cortisol is cortisone. Your adrenal glands do that. It's a stress reaction. What cortisone does, it's an anti-inflammatory and it's an immunosuppressant. And so when your body gets stressed, the stress in and of itself will cause the release of cortisol, reducing your body's ability to fight infection. And as a result of that, you can have reactivation of your shingles. That's why people that are under a lot of stress sometimes end up with shingles infections. Or if they get infections, true infections, not vaccines, because a vaccine doesn't lead to a classic infection. It leads to a rapid immune response that quickly dissipates because there's no ongoing disease process. That's what we call the natural history of an illness. Natural history of a disease is the story that it tells you when it goes through your body. What does it do? What is the pattern? And that doesn't happen with vaccines. A vaccine gives you the first chapter of the story, but then it ends. It doesn't continue. So it's unlikely that the vaccine itself, even if he had that vaccine, would have triggered that. He had a lot of stresses. His partner ended up with what looks like a DVT or a thrombus or a blood clot. And she said that she had a birth control pill. She was on a flight, which can trigger blood clots as well. And that itself is stressful.
And she had a hole in her heart.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know,
she was like the most prone to blood clots you can be, practically.
Correct. Yeah. And she even said that it was a perfect storm for her with that.
But how did people, I didn't understand that intellectual argument that said, look, she got the COVID vaccine and then a blood clot, and her husband gets the COVID vaccine and facial paralysis. Well, how are those two related? Why does one prove the other? That if the vaccine did cause a blood clot, then it must have caused facial paralysis. Makes absolutely no sense to me as an argument. And they're both, I didn't know, by the way, you mentioned that he had COVID. I hadn't read that anywhere. I know there was an open question about even if he had a vaccine, would have probably been last year. So you have seen that he had COVID recently?
Yeah, this is reported in Rolling Stone. They said he had COVID in February.
So then it's more likely that COVID would have triggered this than anything else.
Yeah, you know, and even then, it's 4 months ago. It was in February, so true, we're talking 4 months ago. So, you know, less likely. Usually, it's going
and
to
shingles
happen.
Comes on fast, right?
Yeah, it does. So it usually is going to happen pretty quickly after that. So, I think there are certain individuals that really have a tough time understanding that there are randomness. There's randomness in our lives, and that there's, you know, we don't have control over things like we think we do.
And also, we vaccinated 90% of people in this country.
Yes.
So, and people are still going to get sick and they're going to get injured. And so you could, I guess, connect the vaccine to everything now that's going on. And right? There's a way to connect the vaccine. You know, if all those Edmonton Oilers hadn't been vaccinated, they might be in the Stanley Cup finals. Look, they all got, I got the proof. I've got all the dates of when they got vaccinated and then they lose. How else do you explain that, Doc? One listener said, we had to prove that it wasn't linked. That the vaccine wasn't linked to Justin Bieber's facial paralysis. And I said, no, I think it works. Science works the other way around. You've got a theory. You have to prove it. I don't have to disprove it.
That's right. You can't prove a negative. That's the issue. So when someone is making a claim, as they are, the onus is on them to demonstrate that what they're saying is factual. And it's not up to us to explain to them why it's not. That's just not, you're right. That's not how it works. And I just think it's not how logic works. You know, shingles has been around a long, long time. Millions of people get the infection every year, thousands every day. And it just seems quite strange that we're focusing on Justin Bieber, one of many thousands of people in that day that ended up with shingles and claiming that the vaccine was responsible for his, and really no commentary about anybody else, and actually finding out that those other 1,000 people are. They're usually underlying conditions that led to it. So
the column in Science-Based Medicine actually points out that this is, in fact, a pro-vaccine story. Justin Bieber, born in Ontario at a time when not every kid got chickenpox vaccines, fell through the cracks. He's too old to have gotten the chickenpox vaccine, too young to have gotten the shingles vaccine. But if he had gotten the vaccine, he wouldn't have this facial paralysis today. So it's a pro-vaccine story, not an anti-vaccine story.
Yeah, and that's why we vaccinate infants or toddlers at 15 months of age for chickenpox, and then again at 4 years, they get a 4 years old, they get a booster to avoid this type of outcome, right? That's what we're trying to prevent, are the complications of chickenpox when they get infected, which is not benign, as people tend to think, and then the consequences of having had chickenpox and its reactivation later in life, which leads to shingles. So that's the whole idea behind it. You're preventing that in the first place.
What? COVID's not the only vaccine that requires a booster? You buried the lead. Thank you, Doc.
You're welcome, Bill.
Dr. Barry Dworkin, medical myth busting. Like.
Good morning, Ottawa. This is the Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
I actually mentioned in the commercial that I'd visited the store in Carleton Place, the furniture store. But I forgot that the main takeaway of that story wasn't what happened in the store or even the friends we had the lunch with earlier. It was on the way back. We were coming back along Highway 7 around the Dwyer Hill area. And I was zipping along doing the regular, I think it's 100 there. But I was zipping along. Maybe I was doing 105 or something, whatever it is. And I wasn't in the passing lane, so we were in no hurry to get anywhere. It's a beautiful day for driving. And off in the distance, maybe not that far away, it's hard to judge distance when the car in front of you is also moving, but because you don't know what speed they're going. But I saw this car in front of me go up in the air like it's in a movie. You know, in a movie, a car chase always ends with the car airborne, which is really not a thing very often on a city street. They build a ramp to make the car go airborne. But and if you've ever been to any of the studios in LA, you'll see that they have these cars that are attached to cranes, and the crane moves them up and spins them around, and it never actually leaves the ground. It's all like an amusement ride. So, but it did. It got airborne, and then you could see sparks as it came down on the other side. Not long after that, I noticed all this rubber on the road and a sign that said caution bump. So I didn't hit the brakes, but I took my foot off the accelerator and we went over it. I'm guessing at closer to 80. And even at 80, I lost 3 fillings.
Come on. It's that bad?
It was crazy. It reminded me of something in Toronto that, as kids, we used to drive fast over it deliberately, but it was a problem for years, something called the Humber Bump, where the Gardner Expressway and the Queen Elizabeth Way connect as we're heading into Toronto over the river. There was always this weird bump. And every year they'd fix it, and every year it would come back. And you could get airborne there as well. I think this was actually bigger. But then I saw yesterday, Matt sent me a story. You didn't even realize that I'd experienced
it. No, I didn't know this was a thing.
The Ottawa Citizen wrote about it. It's the infamous Highway 7, what they call it, launching pad. In fact, I guess we came in a different way, or I didn't notice. The bump is in both directions. And it's apparently been an ongoing problem there, but this spring, it seems to be at its worst. And so they've installed temporary orange speed reduction signs. So the limit goes from 100 to 80, which I'm telling you is still pretty fast. But they need a warning sign ahead of time.
It's that bad, eh?
If I hadn't seen the car in front of me get up in the air, I'm not sure I would have gotten down to 80 in time to make it kind of manageable. But yeah, they got to fix that. And apparently engineers are a bit baffled by it. I mean, they talk about the usual thing that causes the road to heave. It's the freeze-thaw cycle and all those things. But this is really pretty crazy. It's not just a minor thing. Minister of Transportation says it's a heaving highway. Well, thanks. We know that. MTO began monitoring a minor bump in the pavement at this location in late fall of 2021. The minor bump became a more serious issue recently. Geotechnical staff are currently undertaking field investigations. It's looks like the pavement's fairly fresh there too, to determine the cause of the heaving and will recommend solutions for the rehabilitation or repair of this section of pavement. Meantime, they've installed the bump ahead sign. Make it bigger. Put some temporary flashing lights.
Or lights. Yeah, exactly.
Meantime, now that I know it's there, I have to not succumb to the temptation to go out there and just see how high off the ground I can get the car.
That's insane.
Not a good idea. You can do a lot of damage to your vehicle. So, yeah, how come no one else is talking about this?
I don't know. It's the first I saw it was yesterday there on that article.
But people who commute that way are all going, yeah, I know what you're talking about. Now we talked about it.
And even if
the MTO's got to fix this, we got to get on there.
Is it one of those things, like, even though you know it's there, you sort of just, you're in the zone and you kind of forget and then you have to slam on the brakes, like, oh, there's the bump again.
I would think a lot of people just forget it's there.
Yeah, because you're just driving, you're doing your thing. And
that's why I think it needs a flashing light, a set of lights. Especially if there's a lot of traffic, but the traffic's moving fairly quickly. You don't really see the bump until you're right on it. And I don't know if hitting the brakes just as you hit the bump is any better either.
Might be worse even.
I'm trying to figure out how that would mean. You hit the brakes, the nose goes down in the car. It might be even more awkward as you hit it. But anyway, keep that in mind. MTO is on it, but they have no clue what caused it. 717, the Morning Rush. Golden.
You're listening to The Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Nearly one in four homeowners say they'll have to think about selling their home. Nearly one in four if interest rates go any higher. Who are they going to sell it to?
Wow.
There's no market for that. That would flood the market with homes. Now, I suspect people are panicking a little bit and maybe they'll find a way around it. But here's the thing. Your mortgage goes up. Where are you going to get the extra money from? You're now spending that on food and on gasoline. And I mean, I know they wanted to slow down the housing market, but this is crazy. But they have no choice now if they want to control inflation and the rest of the economy. Nearly one in four, according to a new stat. Now, I want to move on from that because I got to get back to the bump. I was going to spend more time on the housing thing. Maybe we'll look into that tomorrow. We'll talk to a housing expert. Actually, Ian Lee's on the show later.
Yeah, we can probably ask him.
We could talk to him about housing and inflation. And I also want to talk to him about what's going on in the stock market yesterday and cryptocurrency. There's a lot of nervousness about the economy in many areas. So that's after the 8 o'clock news. But look at the text I got right away as soon as I mentioned flying over that Highway 7 bump. We hit that bump on the way to Carlton Place. It's insane. We now use the big green truck on the eastbound side of the highway as a reference point to know where it is, Gary and Castle Heights. Bill, OMG, I hit that bump last Thursday. It was pouring rain, lots of spray from the trucks, no car in front of me, so I hit it at 90. It is definitely not minor, Melissa. Told you, Matt.
I'm exaggerating. This is a big bump. I kind of thought you were. I'm not going to lie.
Don in Pembroke. Bill, I just went over the same bump this morning pulling a travel trailer. Whee! Bill, thanks for bringing up the hump on 7. Boggles my mind that they haven't fixed it. Hit that bump every day. Kids enjoy it. Vehicle does not. I watched a car catch 3 feet of air off that bump. I drive that stretch of Highway 7 every day and have for years. They're investigating, but there's a culvert there in the center of a swamp. And it was this bad some time ago, and they tried to fix it once. The ground sinks around the culvert. Yeah, I mean, that was my first thought. There's got to be either some underground spring there or wet. I think there's something unusual going on there. His swamp and culvert maybe explain some of that. So if the culvert holds the highway up and the swamp lets it sink around it, you would get a bump like that. And it is a very rounded bump.
Okay.
That makes total sense to me. And if that's true, you know what the answer might be? They might have to build a small low bridge over it rather than trying to lay the highway on top of swampland. Expensive, but why would it not just keep sinking that way? It's not going to fix on its own. I drive 7 to Carlton Place multiple times a day for work. What also doesn't help is most drivers see 100 kilometers as a suggestion. I drive 100 and most times it seems like I'm going backwards the way the cars go bombing by. Some of the drivers get what they deserve. It's called Darwinism.
Oh, tough crowd.
Hey, Bill, Matt, my nephew moved to Arnprior recently And the first time I went over the bump, I was flying. Reminded me of my roller coaster days. Got over that bump a few times now. And the last time, I was behind a car in the second lane to pass another car. Missed the sign. Wondered why the other passing car in front of me was slowing down. Didn't put on the brakes. Never put on the brakes as you go over the bump. That's what I was told. Rhea in Ottawa. Yeah, I don't think you want to brake. You want to slow down and be
but going take your slow foot off you the brake before you hit it. Yeah.
I'm not sure 80 is even slow enough. But all of those things speak to my suggestion. It needs flashing lights. People are not necessarily seeing. If you go there every day, you could even forget. But if you're making the trip occasionally like I did, it's only because I happened to be paying attention and saw the car in front of me go up in the air. Then I saw the warning sign. By then, I was pretty much on it. But I, as soon as I saw the car in front of me go airborne, I just took my foot off the accelerator. I didn't hit the brake. That's what, I don't know about you, but that's what I tend to do when I see something I'm not sure of. I hover over the brake. Just go, what's happening there? Be ready. And it's a habit I learned from riding a motorcycle in a motorcycle course. Hover the brake if you have any doubts.
That's good advice.
That split second extra it takes to hit the brake can be the difference. 7:31, the morning rush. Good morning, I'm Bill Carroll. Turn up the music,
turn down the lights. You're listening to the Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
It's 7:40. It's the morning rush. Good morning. I'm Bill Carroll. Okay, I'm done with the Highway 7 bump story.
I love
I'm
that.
I'm fascinated by the Highway 7 bump. I just can't believe that they said, yes, we noticed it in the fall and we're looking into it. It's June 15th. June 15th. Why wasn't that fixed as soon as the frost was gone?
Yep. And everybody's saying, oh, it happened 5 years ago. That's the culvert.
And they're still figuring it out. Some guy who just lives out there is like, yeah, there's a culvert and then there's a swampy area around it. So, okay. Mystery solved. You know, they'll send out three geopolitical expert, geosurvey guys.
They're going to survey.
Drill holes and they'll bring out soil samples. And
they'll write a report.
Test it, and there'll be reports and then there'll be committee meetings. And oh, for God's sake, fix the pump.
Meanwhile, Steve knows it's the culvert.
Steve's got it all figured out. But it does sound like it's going to need a better long-term fix. Unless you can prove, look, it costs X amount to fix it every 3 years. That's still cheaper than building a whole bridge over it. But whatever you're going to do, you just got to do it. So I said I was done with it. Apparently I'm not. The other story that we become a little fascinated by on the show is this bomb scare on Parliament Hill. Which I originally just rolled my eyes at because bomb scares happen. People call in bomb calls. They evacuated. They locked in place both at once, which makes no sense. But it was on the weekend. There's hardly anyone on Parliament Hill in that district now during the week, let alone a weekend. So I didn't give it a whole lot of thought. But it is getting more interesting because it looks like the people they arrested in connection with it initially were targeted in some way. Manveer Singh says Ottawa police arrested him and told him they had credible information that he was connected to a serious bomb threat on the hill.
I'm still in shock. I couldn't sleep for a couple of nights after that. You know, I'm still uncomfortable and lots of questions in my mind, like who wants to, you know, set me up? Like, what was that credible information that they just direct came to me and arrested me?
Parminder Singh says he was shocked and confused when Ottawa police told him his name was connected somehow to this threat.
I'm proud that as a Canadian Sikh, I love this country. I will do everything to protect this country because I feel as a proud Canadian.
Okay, but those two men are not unconnected. So it's not just a coincidence that they were both named and targeted because they are two organizers of an event that was set up to commemorate the 1984 massacre of Sikhs in India. So clearly someone was messing with these guys. Clearly someone was unhappy with that event, wanted to make some kind of a political point. So there's at least one report I've seen that a major national security investigation is underway now, and that it related to Sikh extremists. And so there was already a heightened security atmosphere. Then these two people were named, so they acted. I'm not ready to blame police for overreacting or anything here. Sounded like they had reason to be concerned. But these guys were set up, obviously.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to get to the bottom of it. That's for sure. The other story out of Parliament Hill, I just can't get enough of this story. Even though we haven't talked about it because I don't know why, we just haven't put it in or had the time to. But the fact that we sent a member of our minister, that wasn't ministerial staff member, I don't think, but it was a top member of the Department of Foreign Affairs, went to a Russian celebration on the weekend, and everyone seemed surprised and shocked by it. What were the, these are supposed to be high level people who must have known that our government is at odds with Russia. They must have known that. In fact, there have been calls to throw the ambassador out. And so far, Angelina Jolie and the Prime Minister have said, no, we don't want to do that because, you know, it's important to keep the dialogue open. But at the same time, we've been isolating Russian diplomats in this country right now to make a point. And they show up at a cocktail party? Who works for them doesn't know that's wrong? And why do they still work there? Why are you involved in foreign affairs if you didn't have enough sense to say, ooh, probably that's off limits right now? You go there and schmooze at an event at the Russian embassy? What were you thinking? I think that's just fascinating. And I don't know why someone's not fired over it. I don't. Read an article yesterday, I think in the National Post, by a columnist who was talking about the old days of parliamentary decorum, when a cabinet minister would resign, even if they weren't directly involved. I can see Matt's typing it right now, trying to find it. Even if they weren't directly involved in a scandal, they would just take responsibility for it. This article wasn't about Angelina Jolie. It was about the public safety minister, Mendocino, who has gone on the record at least three or four times to say, police wanted us to use the Emergencies Act, and yet police have been testifying, no, we didn't ask for it. And the point is, he should have resigned, right? To preserve the dignity of the government in the old days when parliamentary decorum meant something, he would have been forced to resign. No, he wouldn't have been forced to. He would have, as a gentleman, just offered his resignation immediately to the Prime Minister. Angelina Jolie should do the same thing. Am I saying Angelina? Melanie.
Melanie, yes.
Melanie Jolie. And Angelina Jolie's a diplomat too, right? United Nations.
Oh, that's right.
But Melanie Jolie, the minister, should resign. Right? She should say, someone on my staff made this unbelievably egregious diplomatic blunder. I'm quitting to preserve the credibility of my government. But you know she won't. It's actually more likely that Angelina Jolie will resign than that Melanie Jolie will resign. Much more likely. That's a funny connection to make in my mind, huh?
I missed it, or I would have corrected you. So I just heard her last name. Like, we're good.
Yeah, well, you were thinking Jolie like I was, and I just threw in the rest. But I'm telling you, COVID fog is real. Morning Rush, Bill Carroll.
Trending. Trending today with Matt Harris.
All right, Matt, what do you have for us?
All right, so
what's trending is Connor McDavid.
There's two stories that are trending this morning, and the Connor McDavid one, the sound isn't great. It's just a drunk guy in there. But I think it might be maybe worthy of a reputation rescue tomorrow.
Yeah, maybe.
Depending on what's out there, I think that's an early
front
runner.
About how many endorsements he has.
Yeah, for sure.
Doesn't look good.
No, and it's everywhere on my TikTok and Twitter.
Yeah.
Hugely viral. You know what's been everywhere for the last couple months, though, is Amber Heard. Like, I mean, the memes about her, we've talked about it on this segment several times, but she's finally speaking. She sat down with Savannah Guthrie of NBC News.
This is not a good idea. It doesn't go well when she speaks.
Yeah, I think you're probably right, but they've only released a 25-second preview clip of it. It airs today, tomorrow, and Friday. And here she is, Amber Heard, talking to Savannah Guthrie about just the social media firestorm that it launched here.
Even somebody who is sure I'm deserving of all this hate and vitriol, even if you think that I'm lying, you still couldn't look me in the eye and tell me that you think on social media there's been a fair representation. You cannot tell me that you think that this has been fair.
I mean, maybe I'll give you that, because she was definitely painted as the bad person who, you know, defecates in the bed.
Yeah, I mean, it's a risky strategy to poop in someone's bed. It may come back and haunt you later, so might have brought some of that upon herself. But I noticed that my teenage daughter, who's been following this story,
yeah,
she said to me yesterday, "Have you seen, Dad, that things are turning against Johnny Depp now?"
Online.
The people are starting to point out the things that he's done in his life and in that relationship that are not so cool. Because it went from he's the bad guy to she's the bad guy. And now maybe it's balancing out a bit. People are starting to say, yeah, although he was probably not the greatest guy to be married.
Yeah. I think there's no winners in this story, but I'm curious to see what she'll have to say. A big Dateline special Friday night with this interview.
The Morning Rush. He's Matt Harris. I'm Bill Carroll.
Good morning, Ottawa. This is The Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
There's a lot going on with the economy. Stock markets, taking a dive. Cryptocurrency, did you see Bitcoin yesterday? Plunging. There's a story this morning that 1 in 4 Canadians say if interest rates go up any higher, they're going to have to sell their homes. Slightly smaller number, but not much, already say they're in trouble. They're having trouble making ends meet. Inflation is out of control. It's a mess. Ian Lee is here to make it all understandable for us from the Sprott School of Business, Carleton University. Good morning, Professor.
Good morning, Bill.
Good to have you on. Where do we start? Explain maybe what's going on with cryptocurrency, because that's in the news a lot because the Conservative Party leadership race keeps discussing it. Does this have an impact on the economy in any kind of macro way, what's going on with Bitcoin?
No, but let me turn it around. What's going on in the cryptocurrency market, which was about $1.5 trillion. Sounds like a huge amount of money, but remember, the United States is an enormous economy. And it's just another asset class. I'm not trying to, you know, use jargon or anything. Everybody understands there's different asset classes. Real estate is an asset class. Buying stocks is an asset class. Buying bonds is an asset class. Antique cars, paintings, art, gold, silver, etc. In other words, an investor who's has money can invest in different instruments, different investments, different asset classes. So along comes crypto, created in 2008, got a lot of people excited. I think what we've been living through, the world, in the last 5 years or so has been a cryptocurrency bubble. The investment worlds periodically see investment bubbles. We saw it with the dot-com bubble in 2000 or 2001. You know, the famous tulip bubble in the Netherlands 500 years ago. So you get these bubbles or investment crazes occurring. And I think the crypto market became overhyped and overvalued. Interest rate, so it's very speculative. It's a very speculative asset class, meaning it goes up and down, so it's very volatile. And there's nothing backing it, really. And so very high risk, very high risk. So now along comes inflation. The Federal Reserve has acknowledged publicly they've made mistakes. They underestimated inflation, so they said, now we're going to fix it. We're going to fix it with higher interest rates. Well, this has been this whole subject of what is the impact of interest rates on different asset class performance has been studied to death. And we know that higher risk investments get clobbered. by interest rate increases. And right now, there's two sectors or asset classes that are getting clobbered. One is the cryptocurrency, and the other is technology stocks. And they're both getting clobbered because there's a flight to safety. The way I like to put it, Bill, very quickly is, you know, markets are driven, it's an old cliche, but it's an accurate cliche. Markets are driven by greed and fear. And for the last several years, greed was driving it, making these phenomenal profits that people were making, these phenomenal capital gains. Now, with the interest rates going up from the Federal Reserve, now people are terrified they're going to lose their investment. They're going to go down in value and get wiped out. And so they're heading for the exits. And fear is driving the crypto. But it is merely the canary in the gold mine for the larger economic forces going on in the economy. What all the signals are suggesting is that the U.S. is heading into a recession. And so that's terrifying lots of people. And so you're seeing the tech stocks getting hammered and cryptocurrency values being clobbered.
Is there a way to slow down inflation without having a recession? That seems like a really small needle hole to thread.
It is a very, very small needle hole. And I know that Mr. Polyev has been criticizing Tiff Macklem. I'm no liberal, as you know. I'm a fiscal conservative. But at the same time, I do believe that Tiff Macklem is a highly trained, skilled, educated, experienced, intelligent individual. And more importantly, I just think it's a horrible job. He couldn't pay me enough money to be the governor of the Bank of Canada. Because you are paid relatively small amounts of money. You're not paid $10 million a year like a CEO of a corporation. And you are responsible for the economy. And the central bank has a huge impact on the economy, as we know. And yes, they are trying, keyword trying, to engineer a soft landing. Soft landing means cool down the economy with interest rate increases, cool down the inflation, bring down the housing prices, but don't tip it into recession. That's called a hard landing. And the interest rates work. They do cool down the economy. The question is, where's the sweet spot between cooling it down and pushing it over into recession? And I lived through it in the 70s, early 80s, when mortgage rates went to 20 because they were determined, finally. The government in Canada and the States had kicked the problem of inflation down the road. They kept kicking it down the road for 4 or 5 years, saying, oh, it's going to fix itself. It's going to go away. And it didn't. It got worse and worse and worse and worse. Finally, they said, okay, let's get serious. And they drove the interest rates all the way up to 20%. It worked. It did kill inflation, let's be clear, but it killed it at a terrible price. It tipped the economy into the worst recession since the Great Depression, and the stats are very clear showing that. So we had a wicked recession, just a horrible recession in 80-81, but for the next 30 years, we had very, very low inflation. So to your point, it is the existential question, Bill, that you just asked. Can you cool down and have a soft landing, or is it inevitable that you tip over and into a hard landing and take the economy into recession? That's why they're working night and day at the Federal Reserve and the Bank of Canada to try to avoid that. Right now,
in Canada too, Ian, where our housing market has led the economy for years, especially during these difficult, you know, the COVID period.
Yes.
One out of four Canadians saying they can't afford their house if interest rates go up any higher, and that's the only tool you have to cool inflation. How do you do that without destroying the housing market and bringing the rest of the economy down with it?
Okay, I'm going to be counterfactual here and maybe upset a whole bunch of people, and that's okay. As you know, I'm a former mortgage manager, and I don't consult any of these businesses or industries and have any investments in them. I completely reject that poll, and I'm using data, hard public data. From whom? Oh, the Bank of Canada. So let's start very big picture. Two-thirds of Canadians own a home, one-third don't. So right away, we don't have to worry about the one-third because they're renting, and if you rent, you don't have a mortgage payment by definition, so the mortgage interest rates are not going to affect you if you're renting. So now we're down to the other two-thirds. Half of those people, according to the Bank of Canada itself, Governor Macklem, do not have a mortgage. They've paid off their house, half of all Canadians. So how can you lose your house if you don't owe a mortgage on your house? So now we get down to the one half of Canadian homeowners that do have a mortgage. In the last 90 days, this is Bank of Canada data. I'm not just making this, isn't an opinion. We went from two-thirds of Canadians with variable rate mortgage. They flipped in 90 days to two-thirds now have 70% now have fixed rate mortgages. That's where they flipped into a 3 or a 4 or 5 year mortgage. Well, how can you be affected by rising interest rates? If you've locked in for 5 years, that means you can't have your interest rate increased. And as Governor Macklem himself said, only 10% of mortgages in Canada, homeowners, households, now have a variable rate mortgage. So we say, okay, there's the risk, 10%. But that assumes that those 10% are not going to flip from variable into fixed next week, next month, August, September, October. I predict by the fall, I think we'll be up to maybe 85 or 90%. Therefore, what I'm saying is, crisis, what crisis? Where's the crisis? The data does not support what people are rumoring. And one more
That's great information. And I love that I asked you about it. Okay. One quick last one. You got to be fast here, and I know I'm asking a lot, but I talked about this, I think, yesterday on the show, about how excited we get about, you know, the economy is not doing well in a lot of areas, but look, we have really low unemployment. And can you talk a little bit about the theory that if when you have full employment, which doesn't mean every single person is working,
but it
could be between 4 and 6%, depending on how you view these things. But once you get close to full employment, it can actually fuel inflation.
Yes, yes.
So it's not necessarily good news that the unemployment rate is so low.
You're absolutely right. And that sounds counterfactual maybe to some people listening right now, but here's the logic, and it's based on capacity. It's like the motor. I have a Honda Civic, Honda Element. It's 4 cylinders. Well, it is not a Ferrari racing car. I can't run in the Indianapolis 500. That car would never get up to the speeds necessary. It doesn't have the capacity to drive at that speed. When the economy is hitting full employment, where there's no one left to hire, okay, you're at full capacity, to use the language of economists, and the economy just can't produce anymore. It's running flat out. Everybody understands that every entity has a capacity. Carleton University has a certain capacity. We have so many buildings, so many professors, et cetera, et cetera. And so every organization has a capacity to process hospitals. The Children's Hospital can only process so many people a day. They only have so many beds. That's capacity. The economy right now is running, according to Governor Macklem, not Ian Lee, Governor Macklem, is we are running flat out at 100% capacity. And when that happens, and this has been studied to death and Nobel Prizes have been awarded in this over the years, when you do that, you start to, this is where inflation comes from, because then you have too many dollars chasing too few goods because the economy cannot produce anymore. It's running flat out full tilt.
And then you're worried about retaining your staff, and they demand increases because there are so many jobs available. That pushes up the cost of your service or your product, and then you raise the prices, and around we go.
Yes, and that's why they use interest rates. It's a blunt instrument. Yes, it hurts. I'm not, you know, saying, oh, whoopee, but it does cool down the economy, and I saw it when I was a mortgage manager, and they kept raising those rates, and guess what happened? Fewer and fewer people walked in the door.
Yeah.
I had fewer and fewer customers because that's the impact that increasing interest rates has. It cools the economy down. It reduces demand because you're now spending more money as a business or a consumer in interest, which means you have less money to spend on other things like holidays or renovations, and that is how it cools down the economy.
Got to go, Professor. I don't know whether you made me feel better or worse about where we're headed, but I'll sort that out later. Thanks for your time.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
Professor Ian Lee, Sprott School of Business, Carleton University, The Morning Rush.
News Talk 580 CFRA's $1,000 Minute. Brought to you by Alpine Credits. Homeowners get approved.
Hey, Mike, where are you calling from? Hello, Mike.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm all right. Where are you calling us from?
Johnstown.
All right. There we go. We got your first answer out of you, but that doesn't really count. Sorry about that. Here are the rules.
Okay.
10 questions a minute, $10 per correct answer. All 10 gives you $1,000. Have to take your first answer. You can say pass. We'll go back if there's time. You got it?
Got it.
Well, we'll find out, won't we? Question number one. Who interviewed Amber Heard for NBC News?
Pass.
Name one of the two people expected to testify today in the LRT inquiry.
Patterson.
Who is the cabinet minister responsible for passports?
Melanie Jolie.
On which local highway are drivers complaining about a bump on the road?
7.
When is game one of the Stanley Cup final?
Wednesday.
Who is the governor of the Bank of Canada?
Pass.
What's forecasted high today?
25.
Which NHL player was captured on video holding hands with a woman that was not his girlfriend?
Connor McDavid.
Which venue is hosting the Imagine Money exhibit?
The Bank of Canada?
It's supposed to be Imagine Monet. Sorry, my typo.
Oh, Imagine Monet. That makes more sense. The painter. I've never heard of the Imagine Money thing. Okay, so I'm going to ask you those two questions without the timer.
Okay.
Which venue is hosting the Imagine Monet exhibit?
The Art Gallery.
I've seen it, by the way. It's pretty cool.
Is it? Yeah.
I saw it in Quebec City, yeah. Which part of Ottawa is dealing with a power outage right now?
Carp Road.
There you go. Don't say I'm not more than fair. Run them down, Matt.
All right, sounds good. Who interviewed Amber Heard for NBC News? We were looking for Savannah Guthrie. Name one of the two people expected to testify today in the LRT inquiry. You said Pattinson. There you go. Who is the cabinet minister responsible for passports? You said Melanie Joly.
We would have taken Angelina Jolie because of my concert.
Yeah, but either way, it was Katrina Gold. Name the local highway that people are complaining about the bump. You said Highway 7. When is game one of the Stanley Cup final? You said Wednesday. Who is the governor of the Bank of Canada? We were looking for Tiff Macklem. What's the forecast high today? You said 25. Which NHL player is holding hands on video with someone that's not his girlfriend? You said Connor McDavid. Which venue is hosting the Imagine Monet exhibit? You said the Art Gallery. The EY Center. And which part of Ottawa is dealing with a power outage right now? You said Carp Road, which, yes, we will take. It's out in the Stittsville area. You got yourself $60.
All right. Thank you very much.
Pretty decent showing, Mikey. Thank you. Appreciate it. The Morning Rush. Gord Wilson talks Sens hockey and the Stanley Cup Finals coming up next.
Now, the Inbox. Everybody's talking about it. On News Talk 580 CFRA.
Bill, great news on the removal of the vaccine status for travelers in Canada. The government needs to do more and bring back the laid-off workers at Pearson. That's also part of the backlog story. Third issue, not being discussed, large number of pilots being grounded for unknown medical reasons. It's great to fix one problem, but this last issue could be problematic for travelers. Pat and Manitic, I am not aware of pilots being laid off for unknown medical reasons. Sounds like someone's hinting at, like, vaccines made them sick, or maybe not. Maybe I'm reading too much into that. Bill, we sent our daughter's passport application in March. Still haven't received it. My husband is currently on hold with the passport office to get an update. Good luck with that. He was caller number 79. We understand there's a backlog, but 3+ months to receive government ID? Unacceptable. And one last one. Most of these mortgages Ian Lee was speaking of were also funded based on a stress test. So it looks like very few mortgage holders should be concerned. Michelle, I thought Ian Lee's description of why that 1 out of 4 Canadians thinking of selling their home if interest rates go up, the way he broke that down statistically was brilliant. It made me a lot less worried about an influx of homes going on the market and a housing complete collapse. So, all right, Wheel of Hosts, who's in today?